Today's program has been brought to you by Cane Vineyard and Winery, a Napa Valley winery committed to respecting the soil and dedicated to the creation of three Cabernet blends. For more information, visit cane5.com.
Hey, I'm Jimmy Carboni from Beer Sessions Radio. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Cooking Issues. This is Dave Arnold, your host of Cooking Issues, coming to you live on the Heritage Radio Network from Roberta's Pizzeria in Bushwick, Brooklyn, every Tuesday from, like 12 or so,
No big deal.
No big deal, like 12:50, something like that. Call in your questions to 718-497-2128. That's 718-497-2128. Joined, as usual, with Nastasia of the Hammer Lopez. How you doing?
Good.
Yeah, And Jackie Molecules in the booth.
I'm here, full of molecules.
Oh, yeah, as are we all.
That's right.
You know, again, not to belabor the point too much, but that was like the whole point of the flavor exhibit at the museum. We're all just big sacks of molecules. You know what I mean?
Peter couldn't come today. He's going to Ethiopia tomorrow.
Oh, Peter Kim, the guy running the food museum now, headed off to Ethiopia, where his wife lives. Hopefully he'll bring us back some more delicious Ethiopian coffee and spices and whatnot. You know what he should bring back this time?
Hmm.
He should bring back... Are you allowed to bring grains back?
I don't know.
Like uncooked grains? Teff.
I'll look.
I want some good teff. Because now, I can teff it up strong now. I got the wet grinder. I can go crazy. And speaking of wet grinder... Did you taste the mustard that Johnny brought last week? It's good, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we used that at our at the demo at the at MOFAD. And big shout out to Mark Bystrom, who's the beverage director of the Underground Food Collective, who made that mustard, and here's where it ties back in, in a wet grinder. Grinds it for like 3 days in a wet grinder to get the texture right. And the wet grinder is my new old favorite piece of equipment that I just got a new one of, and a question, if we get to it, you never know, a question will come up later in the podcast about wet grinders and whatnot. So anything good or bad happening?
No.
How was your Monday night bachelor celebrations?
Great.
Yeah, so it's like been a banner week for you. You had your Super Bowl.
I know.
You made Jack check this out.
Yeah.
Mark Ladner,
right,
made the chili at Nastasia's Super Bowl party. Here are two facts. One, he has never made chili before.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
He has never made chili before. Never. And fact two, he put cumin in it, which, as we all know, as anyone who loves life knows, that you need cumin in your chili, or what is it, Stas?
Or it's a beef tomato stew.
Yeah.
So Mark put cumin in it, and here's the fun fact of the day. Nastasia enjoyed it.
It's good.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like,
I think you were biased.
No, I would not. No, doesn't matter.
Oh, no. Please. Please. Nastasia biased towards just like, my boyfriend made it, so it's good. No, my boyfriend made it, so it's bad. It has to be like three times
so
better.
So there's more of a chance it would have gone the other way. I see what you're saying.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
You kidding me?
So just as you don't generally like chili, huh?
I love chili.
Oh, okay.
I do. I don't like cumin.
Yeah.
If I put it in myself, I would hate the chili. Not seeing it.
Yeah, but the other thing
is... How does one hate cumin?
I don't
smell like a taxi driver.
What the hell kind of crazy racist bullcrap is that? My God.
Like one taxi driver I had long ago.
Oh,
smells like that.
Are you getting a little taste of what I have to deal with on a daily basis?
How's that racist?
Sometimes there's a smell memory that
smell memory in my butt. All right, listen. Here's the other thing. Is that, but back on the, honestly, like, Nastasia would have loved nothing better than to have hated the chili, because it should have been like, big famous chef can't even cook chili? Can't even cook chili? Right? Yeah. You would have loved that.
Love.
All right, got some questions. This one goes out first because I want the chat room to weigh in on this guy. Jarvis from Milwaukee writes in, "Hey Dave and Stas and Jackie Molecules. In a month and a half, my new wife to be and I wait. New wife to be right. Just got engaged. New wife to be, not new wife. New wife to be.
The moment where you're able to, what do you say? Break off the marriage.
Well, I look, you know, it's I've said it like many, many times over many, many years. The worst thing in the world is fiancé. Right? That's like an open target. That's like, it's like deer season. You know what I mean? It's like, because look, here's the thing, right? One of them's, you know, popped the question, bought the ring or whatever. The other one said yes, right? Now you're in this moment. You're about to make this big, huge, you know, hopefully permanent commitment, but you haven't done it yet, right? You haven't walked down the aisle yet. So anyone, if they had the second thoughts, that's when their second thoughts, that's when they're creeping in. That's why, you know, I mean, I won't go into the actual personal people that I know this has happened to, but that's why, you know, if you're going to make the move, that's when you make the move. Not that I don't think you should make a move on someone who is engaged. Never. I would never say that. That's a terrible thing to say. But what I'm saying is you're at that moment where you're about to dive in the pool. So you either get off the diving board or you dive in the pool. You pivot one way, you pivot the other. But it's like a momentous kind of a decision.
Mm-hmm.
You know? They're second guessing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying you're second guessing, Jarvis, or your wife to be is second guessing. I'm not saying
you
about
might
you
be
personally.
Breaking off there.
I'm not. Stas, come on now, Jack. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, because look, not everyone is meant to be together, but they still say yes. Mm-hmm. My feeling about this, and people, this is not a marriage show.
It could be.
Could be.
That's Jack and my dream.
Yeah, it's
what,
true.
This is a marriage show?
No, that's like a personal show.
A personal show?
Yeah, the show,
show
Issues yeah. with Nastassia and Jack.
Oh, okay.
Just
well,
regular issues.
Here's a little fun fact for you. Most people I know who have gotten married and then gotten a divorce.
Everybody said.
They knew at the time it was the wrong thing to do. They knew when they were walking down the aisle that it was a freaking mistake.
What are you supposed to do at that moment?
Well, that's what I'm telling you.
Turn around.
Don't get to that moment. Let me tell you. Here's the thing, right?
This is if you had balls.
Look, this is what is terrible about the whole Megillah, the wedding Megillah, right? Mm-hmm. Is that there's thousands of, like, you start spending money, there's thousands of dollars. All your friends are happy. Your family's happy. Everyone's happy. You're probably even happy. But you have this nagging thing in your head, and the people who break up.
What is that nagging thing?
I have no idea. I don't have a nag. I've been married over 20 years.
Yeah, I know, but what do you think these people?
I have no idea. All I know is that, you know, I said, you know, you talk afterwards, you get the post game highlights of the marriage, and they knew when they were walking down the aisle. They knew it.
It's like going to see a movie you didn't really want to see, you know, and then it starts, you're there, and then in the back of your mind, you're like, I knew I didn't want to see this movie. Maybe it's something like that. Because you have to stay. You have to go through with it.
Yeah, yeah. Once you're in.
But at least it's dark.
Anyway, so Jarvis, this has nothing to do with you. Okay, so
yeah,
back
sorry.
To your question. Wife-to-be will be traveling to Seattle for our honeymoon.
What a tangent.
Yeah. Oh, so you're actually about to get married. Good. So in a month and a half, it's going to be over. None of this fiancé crap.
Still has a month and a half.
It's also the only thing. You could be a boyfriend and a girlfriend or whatever. You can be going out with someone forever. Right. I know, you know, look at you, Stas. How many years?
I don't know.
Yeah. Like, forever you can go out. You know what I mean?
Well, you're saying this moment.
Oh, yeah. Like married? You could do that until you die. You know what I mean? This fiancé is like the least permanent freaking thing on earth. You know what I mean? It's like, it's specifically designed to not be a permanent situation.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It is inherently unstable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, anyway, back to the question.
I think you're convincing him not to do it.
I'm not. I'm saying go through with the wedding. That's what I'm saying. I mean, with no other knowledge in my head. Anyway, Seattle for our honeymoon. That's an interesting choice. Seattle for the honeymoon? What do you think, Stas?
I think maybe it's based on cheapness. My friends chose South Carolina or something.
Really?
Because the flight was like $64. And I was like,
My sister just got married. St. Lucia said it was amazing.
Yeah, see? That's nice.
I say if you're going to do a honeymoon, just like go all out. I don't know. Deal with it later.
We went to Italy on our honeymoon. Italy!
That's how my grandma says it.
Yeah? Yeah, that's where we went.
She says bottle, too.
Bottle? Yeah, because we had never been, and it was, you know, life-changing. It was awesome. Anyways. We are going to eat and drink as much as we can and wanted to know if you had any can't-miss spots that you could recommend. We scheduled a tour of modernist cuisine, and also Chef Steps reached out to us and said we can tour also. We will be doing some hiking, going to wineries, etc. I thought in a past episode you mentioned there was a place in the state of Washington where either apples or some fruit or something was being preserved, and they have a museum there. I don't remember. You remember that?
No.
Oregon, yeah. Corvallis. They have all of the pears, and I think they also do. They do pears and they do berries, but that's in Corvallis, which is a hike. And don't tell the Seattle people that you think that the Oregon's the same thing, or you'll be in deep doo-doo with them. Where either apples or some fruit or something was being preserved, and they have a museum there. I hope that makes sense, because I can't remember and tried to go back to your old podcast, but can't find it because they're not in the database, Jack.
What's not in the database?
No one can search our old podcast. It's hard.
Yeah, they can.
Whatever. I couldn't find stuff I was looking for the other day. Yeah, whatever.
Fair enough. Different.
Whatever. Okay, so listen. I don't know. Is anyone, any of our people who are from Seattle or thereabouts, why don't you answer in on the chat room this question?
Chef Tom Douglas, that's who you want to look for. He's got like a dozen restaurants. Really cool guy. We've done some stuff with him before.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah? Nice.
Look up Tom Douglas.
All right. But also, if anyone has any recommendations, and they're in on the chat room, shoot them on over to Jarvis in Milwaukee. I hope I didn't say anything bad about marriage. I didn't say anything bad about marriage. I'm pro-marriage.
I know, Dave.
All right. All right. But I wanted to get that one out first so people could write their recommendations in. Ben wrote in, it was a couple weeks ago, we're just getting into it now, on milk. I've been making the Chef Steps espresso martini a lot recently. I hate, turning the S to an X, but sometimes...
The worst.
Worse. People in my family do it.
Wow. Worst.
I don't know why.
Do you correct them?
I don't. You don't correct your family, do you?
Yeah.
You correct your family?
Yeah, when they say espresso, this is what you do. You just make that noise.
You know what, though? You know what I say? Nuclear. Nuclear.
Why?
Because who wants to say nuclear?
Nuclear.
It's nuclear. Like, when you're talking about the nucleus, or like you're actually referring to something scientific, nuclear is fine. When you have a bomb, it's nuclear. Go nuclear. Do you go nuclear on someone, or do you go freaking nuclear on them?
I don't know.
You don't know? Yeah, I don't know. There's another one. Coupon. I'm a coupon guy. Coupon. I clip my coupons. What about you? Are you a coup or a cube?
I like to clip coupons.
Yeah! Know. Jack, what about you?
Coupon.
Oh!
It might be a Long Island thing.
Yeah, he holds his pinky out in Brooklyn while he clips his coupons.
I think coupon comes from your parents.
Yeah, pardon me, do you have any Long Island clipped thing. Coupons? You know what I mean?
Okay, it's like coupon, though. That's different.
Coupon.
Also, if you're clipping coupons, like, you know, you're not trying to show your wealth.
Coupon! All right, so here we go. I don't know. Look, there's nothing wrong with saving money. How do you think rich people get rich?
Yeah. Well, that's, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Anyway, making the Chef's espresso martini. I make it with tequila along with the jalapeno stuff from Liquid Intelligence. I can't keep it in stock because whenever someone comes over, here, smell this, results in whole bottle magically disappearing. I do like tequila with the jalapeno. ISI, I assume, which is the way I do it. This recipe has you – this is the Chef Steps recipe, I guess – has you milk wash the coffee booze. I've tried it with a few different milks and have had very different results. Cheap, ultra-high temperature milk makes small but distinct curds. You like that phrase? Small, yeah. Regular, whatever else someone gets from the supermarket, makes bigger, still distinct curds. What's A2 milk?
I don't know.
We should look it up. Jack, look it up. What's A2 milk? A2 milk makes one giant monster curd that looks like it might become sentient. I like a sentient curd.
It's just a company.
Oh. The yield is pretty flat for the first two types of milk, but the A2 donated a bunch of extra liquid whey. What's actually happening in milk washing? How much booze is left in the curds and how much whey ends up in the final product? Thanks, Ben. Here's another call out for the transcripts. P.S. One of the main benefits of transcripts would be a way to make a full list of all the things that you and Dave hate. Jack, has there been anything that you hate?
I haven't really. I feel like here and there.
Like, what do you hate?
What do I hate?
I'll have to get back to you on that. Like foods or just like things in general?
Well, I mean, you can start with food.
I just said espresso. I hate that.
Oh, there you go. All right, good.
We'll start there.
We got to start keeping a list of Jack hates. Yeah. okay, back to your question. It's interesting. I mean, obviously what's going on here is the level of pasteurization is affecting the protein somewhat, and therefore the clotting strength. Because it's I don't know 100% like what the actual reactions are. We should talk to a cheese person. I one time did a bunch of research on the effect of pasteurization on cheese making, and all of the cheese making blogs talk about the differences between the different pasteurization levels of milk and the curds. But I forgot to look it up again before I came in today, and I can't remember the exact right spiel on it. But what's technically happening in milk washing in general is this. you are using the casein to mop up the polyphenols and other weird things that are kind of either bittering or astringent in whatever you're doing, coffee, tea, whatever. Then you precipitate out, you make it curd. So in the case of coffee, a lot of times it'll curd on its own because coffee is A, acidic, B, it's in alcohol, which destabilizes the proteins, and C, it's got a lot of things that can bind with destabilize the protein, the casein micelles. So coffee often will clot on its own. And usually things that clot faster for me on their own like that make little small things that you then have to sweep into kind of larger curds. But whatever, that's just my personal experience. So that's what's happening with milk washing. Now, presuming that you get the same amount of yield out, you should get almost all of the whey out. It is true that I've had recently with milk washing where I've reheated in the presence of acid, I get a lot of whey precipitation, almost like making a ricotta. But that's only if the acidity level gets pretty high and it's still warm when you do it, which I assume you're not doing here. So there shouldn't be that much of an effect on the whey because you're not precipitating the whey out with the technique in milk washing. However, if you did, I'm sure it would affect it greatly because heat really affects whey proteins quite a bit. Anyway, what do you think?
Good
job. Yeah. She just says that's all. Shut up. That's what it is. Okay. Chris wrote in about China and chocolate.
Let's hold that. We got a caller.
Oh, caller. You're on the air.
Hey, Dave. How are you? It's Alvin Schultz from Houston, Texas.
Hey. All right. What's up? How's Texas?
Cool. Yeah. We can come down and shoot. Anyway, I got an update for you on an eggnog question that I wrote in about a year ago and a question about nixtamatics.
Okay. Hold on a second. Stay on afterwards because I have an eggnog question that came in, and I'll read it. And since you have some aging eggnog experience, we can talk about it together for a little bit, all right?
Okay, cool. All right. You want me to ask the nixtamatic question then?
Yeah, go nixtamatic.
Nixtamatic. So in Mexico City, where do you buy it?
Ooh, man, I wish I could remember where it was. Like, are you going on your own, or do you have, like, a contact down there?
I'll probably be going on my own. I know some people down there, but I don't know if any of the people I know are going to know where to buy a nixtamatic.
I forget the name of the neighbor. It was within walking distance of the Alameda, and it was, like, between there and the market that's right near Alameda. So it wasn't all the way down by Merced, and there was, like, a little cooking district there, cooking equipment district, and it was all the shops. So if you see any cooking district like on the map in Mexico City that's within like a mile or a mile and a half of like the Alameda area, that's where I went. And you just walk around the shops, and a bunch of different people have them. And so it's just a matter of haggling on the price.
And they run about $250 or so.
That's my memory. Yeah, I mean, I bought it in my head. Whenever I really want a piece of equipment, I fudge the conversions in my head to make it seem like it's cheaper for me. You know what I mean? That's just like a mental.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So, like, what else would I get when I was down there? I got that, but it's a lot to carry. Obviously, like, I wish if I had infinite strength and money to bring stuff back, I would bring back a matate, a real one, just for the heck of it, just because I would like to have one. But I would never really use a matate, to be honest, because if you have the nixtamatic, Then you could just get a wet grinder to do the rest of this stuff that's not like Nixtamatic friendly. Like between the two of them, you can grind pretty much anything wet. You know what I mean? All right.
Yeah.
So
you're getting good puff off of your masa for tortillas out of the Nixtamatic.
Getting good what? Oh,
your tortillas are puffing consistently.
Look, no. Like, they're getting better and better on that, right? But that's really a function of grind. Like, the commercial grinders are, like, so big, and it grinds so fine. The coarser your masa, like, the less you're going to guarantee you're going to get a puff out of it. Now,
right.
I know that, some people prefer that, like, really light, really fine grind, like, tortilla, masa for tortillas, and some people actually don't mind if their masa for their tortillas is a little bit, a little bit coarser, so you could still see like a little bit of speckling in it. What about you, Stas? What do you feel?
My masa being speckled.
You like it speckled?
I don't know.
She doesn't care. She doesn't
really
care.
I like speckling
it
for tostadas.
Yeah, and obviously
fry them.
Yeah, but yeah, right. Like, because they look better. Yeah, but. I get your point, but the thing is that every time I use the Nixtamatic, it gets better. So, that's where I'll go there. So, like, the first three or four batches you make, they will not puff. The straight up, I'm telling you, they will not puff. Once you get past that, the more you use it, the more the kind of puff rate goes up. But you're not going to get, like, the out-of-the-box performance with that thing that you would get with, like, a real stone grinder or, like, the ones that are, like, $1,000. Like, I forget what model, Alex Stupak got up here, or a couple other people have, bought up here. But there's a...
Yeah, the ones at Cosme, right?
Yeah, like, they're, like, mid-size stone wheel grinders, but, that's, like, the next level of horsepower motor up and, like, three levels up in price. Like, you can't make an excuse to buy that and have it unless you're using it pro, you know what I mean?
You can't push the conversion on that one, right?
Yeah.
So I have a process that I'm getting pretty consistent puff on. So I'm grinding by hand with a Corona as fine as it'll grind, and I've got probably 2 or 3 dozen batches through my Corona right now. And then I'm taking that grind and putting it in the Vitamix dry grains container. The only thing is, and I'm just grinding the heck out of it in the Vitamix.
Right.
The only thing is, every time I do it, I feel like I'm going to blow the fuse, and then my Vitamix will be out of commission for a couple hours. But unfortunately, I have two. So, so if I blow, it's the second one that gets really nervous. But my tortillas have been popping pretty consistently.
Well, let me tell you, if you're using the Corona, I can't believe that you're still alive. I hate using that thing so much.
My right arm is really huge.
I imagine that, like, you're like, your one arm is like a stick and the other one is like a, like, like somebody else's leg, like John Cena's arm, because I hate the Corona. Remember when we had Long Stas and I insulted his manhood and we made him grind all of that masa that night?
Yes.
Nightmare. Corona. Oh, Corona is such a nightmare. You're going to love the Nixtamatic, brother. If you're using the Corona, you're going to love the Nixtamatic. Just give it some grinding time. All right, now eggnog.
Eggnog.
What do you got? I'll say the question I got, and then you can tell me about it. All right. May May Kitchen, friends of the show, Boston, they wrote in. Here's what they said. I hope you guys are well. We made eggnog recently using 4 quarts of cream, 1 quart of El Dorado spiced rum, 1 quart of 1-to-1 simple, and 24 eggs. Holy crap, that's rich. That's freaking rich. The eggs were separated. Whites were whipped with cream, simple and booze, and then combined with yolks. After 2 weeks, the nog mellowed. No change after 4 weeks. After 8 weeks, it had turned into marshmallow snot. See video. I didn't get to see the video, but I believe you. Still tasted fine. How? What? Should we try to turn it into something weird and or delicious? Is actually already weird, but not necessarily delicious. Thanks to folks at May May. I think it's just, you think the water content is just all that fat? Like, what do you think's going on, Alvin?
I think the egg whites, I would mix everything but the egg whites and just fold back in egg whites when you're ready to drink it and not age it with the the whites on it.
So you think the whites are setting? You think it's like a low water thing and the whites are somehow setting over time, like alcohol denaturation?
I think so. So what I was going to call in with my update is I made a batch of Ruhlmann's eggnog and also George Washington's eggnog at the very beginning of 2015. And I drank it over this past holiday season. I tasted both. Ruhlmann's doesn't really change much. I think I did the math, and that's what I called it for. a year ago, and I think the math on rural bins came out to about 22%. Washington was about 12.5, and Washington was real interesting. It got sour, but not unpleasant at all. It had like these notes of blue cheese on the nose, but then like almost like a tangy goat cheese on the palate. So I call it almost like an eggnog sour.
Both were
pleasant, and both were aged at room temperature for the better part of a year.
You're not really selling me on the blue cheese eggnog. It's like you got to come up.
It smells funkier than it tastes, but it wasn't unpleasant at all. I recommend you put it in a tin and shake the stuff out of it. Just shake it up real good to dilute it back down, and it's pretty tasty.
Yeah. So Nick Bennett did like a 3-year-old eggnog, but I didn't get to taste it. Our former bar captain and now the guy at Porsche Light and Stas, we tasted what? 3-year-old? What did we think? Did we taste it?
We didn't taste it.
Or did we decide it smelled like poison?
Yeah.
I think we decided it smelled like poison. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm trying to get to a vertical. So I made another batch of Ruhlmann this year. Nick inspired my batches, so I'm going to try to get the 5-year vertical.
Right. And so your advice to Maymay is to hold the white back?
I would hold the white back. I don't know what recipe she's using, but with Ruhlmann's without the white is just fine after a year. It tastes boozy and nice, but no funk at all.
Now the real question is,
get funky.
What are we going to do with this one that's already funky? Mix it into some sort of baked good? What are we going to do? I don't know.
Make cannellades.
Yeah. All right. All right, very good. So you're going to keep track of your tests, and you're going to give us a call back and let us know how your vertical goes. Every year we'll come back, as long as we keep doing the show. Every year you come back and tell us how you're doing with the nog.
Yeah, sounds good.
All right, brother.
All right, see ya.
All right, have a good one.
All right, we got two more callers on the line. So next caller.
All right, caller, you're on the air.
Hey, Dave, it's Matt from Mystic calling back about the haggis.
How was the haggis?
It was amazing, man.
Oh, great. Oh, man,
yeah, it worked. It worked like a charm, but it stunk to high heaven. The bung stinks.
The bung stinks. That's like that's your next album. The bung stinks.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, did you do any like pre-soaking or like washing or scrubbing?
I soaked it for 24 hours beforehand, and it didn't really help. My kitchen, there's still a faint aroma of bung every time I fire up the stove.
So. Wow.
I think next year I'll do it off-site.
That's the follow-up album, Faint Aroma of Bung.
Yeah. Well, we can get a trilogy out of it if we're careful.
Well, I wish, we were here for Johnny. I wish this was last week when Johnny was here, because I'm sure he's dealt with that kind of an issue before. There's got to be some sort of, like, pre-poach in milk that will help out. The thing is, you just don't want to have it shrink up too much and everything before you stuff it. That's the real issue, right?
Yeah, that's what I would be afraid, because like once you get it in the hot liquid, it really seizes up nicely.
Yeah, right. That's the whole point. How could you? Just a bunch of changes of water.
It didn't impart any off flavor, honestly. During the first hour or so of the boiling of it, it was like really gross.
But like poopy or like tripe slaughterhouse smell?
A combination. It's sort of like a halitosis note,
right?
And some barnyard funk.
Yeah, yeah.
But the oats worked. The oats came out great, so it was like totally permeable. And I did add a little bit more broth to the mixture than I normally do with the lamb meat, et cetera. But it came out great.
So. Nice. How are the neeps and tatties?
Oh, great. We must do like 5 pounds each at least. And they go like crazy too. So
awesome. Awesome.
Yeah. There was very little haggis left over, which is always a good sign of success.
Do you like, hey Jack, can people post pictures to our thing? Someone can put the picture on.
If they send it to me.
Yeah, send a picture. We'll put it up on the thing of your haggis. I want to see it.
All right, cool. I will. Yeah, I will. Can I tag you on Instagram with it?
Yeah.
It looks like the sandworm from Dune.
Oh, nice.
That sounds cool.
Those creeped the hell out of me when I was a kid.
It's real.
You know what freaked me out in Dune? That dude who like would always like have people's hearts plugged, and then what would he do? Drink their blood or something? So gross. Remember that dude? Remember that dude, the dude who was on that chair that would float around, and he had those people, and he would unplug their hearts? Isn't that what would happen on Dune?
I don't, it's not ringing a bell. Baron Harkonnen?
Look, it's been a billion years since I've seen Dune. I saw it when I was too young, and it was alternately boring and horrifying. But I was a kid when I saw it, so I don't know. I never read it.
I got another caller when you're ready.
But listen, send that stuff in. I'm glad it worked out.
Yeah, I will.
All right, cool. Awesome.
Cool. All right, thanks.
All right, cool. Caller, you're on the air.
Hey, this is Scooter in Montana.
How you doing?
Not too bad. I have a question about pressure canning. Okay. I've been pressure canning soup, and everything that I've read says you can't pressure can anything that's been pre-thickened with flour, and you can't do noodles. So I'm wondering why that's the case, and if so, how do they get those sort of deliciously overcooked noodles in your can of Campbell's chicken noodle?
Huh, that's a good question. Presumably what's happening is you're taking the starch well, because you cook starch, it absorbs stuff. There's a maximum thickness, right? And then after you reach that maximum thickness, then you get viscosity breakdown as you totally disintegrate the kind of starch, right? And so that's why, if you look at a starch thing, that's what will happen. So presumably they're saying that it'll reduce the thickening. Nothing terrible is going to happen. Have you tried it?
No, I have not tried it yet.
I mean, I would obviously, I'm sure they they must just get the water balance exactly right, throw the pasta in, and then have it all absorb and come out, come out right where they want it. You know what I'm saying? Like the same way that beans are so highly tweaked out that, they know exactly how long they want their pre-soak. They know exactly everything. You know what I mean? And so that they put them in the and they know the pH of their water. They know the salt content. They know everything. You know what I mean? And so they load them into those cans, and they come out perfect almost every single time. So there's got to be some trick with the pastas. But the pastas are pretty soft. I mean, I haven't had a spaghetti-o in a long time, but they're pretty
soft.
No, they're really soft, and they're not necessarily ideal, but for some reason I sort of love them.
Yeah, also, what if you stuck only with pastas? Stas, what's the shape of pasta that's shaped like a rice grain? It's real thick.
Oh.
Wait, orzo or something?
Yeah, yeah. Something like that I think would hold up a lot better. Or what's the one that's a really thick square that's you know what I'm talking about? They're thick squares, and they're meant for soups, but they're pasta little bricklets. Those things would hold up. I think thicker pastas are gonna obviously stand up because it's gonna take longer for the inside to turn to complete mush. The outside will turn to complete mush. As for thickening, thickened mixes with flour, I'm sure it's just a matter of they won't be as thick when it comes out. You're not gonna get poisoned. You know what I mean?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, some of the things that I've read have said that it does increase the botulism risk because it slows the heating through the jar.
Oh, good point. Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. But that's okay. I don't know. Is there any data? In other words, the people who say that, did they say this in 1965? A family of four cooked soup with starch in it. And they died. You know what I mean? Because that's what you need to say. Because the fact of the matter is, there's nothing in canning that says, please measure the viscosity of your ingredients. Right?
Right.
I could take an entire brick of pork, slam it into a can, and follow the freaking canning procedures, and I'm okay. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, off the top of my head, I just don't believe it. But, I mean, I see what they're saying, that you're inhibiting the convective forces that's going on. But, in the absence of some data where someone followed good canning procedure, right, and maybe you have to increase the time. I mean, it's been a long time since I've looked at canning procedures, but, maybe for something that's not a lot of liquid, you have a different thing. But I just say I doubt it from a safety standpoint. Doubt.
Okay. Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking, and I'll give it a try and
call.
Let's know how it turns out.
Yeah. All right, cool. Let us know what happens.
Pick up the line.
All right. So, wait, should we go to a break?
No, we're gonna. This is the home stretch here.
Oh yeah?
Yeah.
We're ripping through. Who's the sponsor?
We're ripping through. It's Kane Vineyard and Winery. I was gonna put an ad in later, but I will say that Chris from Kane is a really awesome dude. Great Napa winery.
Yeah.
A lot of interesting stuff. I do have another caller if we want to take that.
Yeah, sure. Caller, you're on the air.
You know what? They hung up as soon as I picked up.
Oh,
never
man.
Mind. Keep them moving.
Man. Maybe they were. Yeah. Too bad. Sorry, caller. So you've had the wine. It's good?
It is, yeah. I had his cuvée.
Do you know who's never had the wine?
Us. You?
Yeah. Nastasia, have you had the wine?
No. Where's the wine?
Ooh, Erica's in here, and she visited the winery.
Well, you
guys are missing out.
Stas, have you visited the winery?
Nope.
I'll tell you something. Here's something Nastasia does not hate.
Wine?
Visiting wineries?
Drinking wine?
Drinking wine.
I don't know. Do you like visiting wineries, or you just want the wine? Are you like my stepfather? He doesn't want to talk about fishing. He just wants to fish. Doesn't want to talk about wine and cigars.
I don't care about visiting the wineries. Do you?
Me? I mean, wineries can be pretty, but like, yeah, I like the drinking the wine.
What are your favorite wines?
I don't really like being in Napa because it's hot as hell. Well, obviously, Stas.
I really don't know enough.
Stas has got to be like Nebbiolo,
no,
right?
No, style.
Champagne?
All right. See? Okay. Love that. Yeah. Love that.
So if you're at a restaurant and you open the wine list, like where do the two of you go?
Well, it depends on what you're eating.
I mean, okay. Yeah, what am I eating?
I don't know.
I mean, a lot depends on what I'm eating.
It wasn't a fully formed question.
It's like, what's the temperature outside and what am I eating? And how much money does the person who's buying dinner for me have?
If the person
buying dinner has a non-finite amount of money, I start out the meal with a glass of vintage champagne because duh.
Or let them choose if they have that much money.
No, but like, and then like, yeah. Let's say we're Italian. I like to have, if you can call ahead and the person has infinite money, they open a bottle of Amarone, like a really nice old Amarone, let it air out for you. Wouldn't that be pleasant? I'm a fan of Amarone.
That would be nice.
You know, I'm a very simple, like, I'm not like out there on a limb. Like, I like stuff that everyone likes. I like Barolos. I like Amarones. Yeah. I like champagne. I like, you know, I don't want to have a big American wine all the time, but I enjoy that, like, you know, 90s style big butt, like U.S. Zinfandel. Like, I love that stuff. You know what I mean? I like everything. I like everything if it's good. What about you, Stas?
True, yeah.
If it's good, I like it. Okay. Jared wrote in about orange flower water. I've never thought about orange flower water. Here's what he says. Lately, I've been enjoying the addition of orange blossom water to my daily tea so much that I've been running through it at about a cup per day. A cup of orange flower water?
That's a lot of orange flowers.
That's a lot of freaking orange flowers. A lot. It's become a rather costly habit. I'm wondering if there's a more cost-effective way to simulate the pleasant aroma in my beverages, maybe through the use of essential oils. Would that work? As far as I know, oil and water don't play well together, so I'm hoping you provide a way to emulsify the two that won't drastically change the viscosity of the water. For dietary reasons, I'd rather not use alcohol or sugar-like substances. Fats and acids are okay. Jared in Vancouver. Well, you know, gum arabic is what you want to use. You typically, I don't know why, but in soda formulations, when people are using gum arabic, you put the gum arabic into water, and they always say add a drop of alcohol, you know, or like a couple of drops. And I don't know why. I don't really know why. To be honest, the reason you use gum arabic is because it dilutes well. The suspension dilutes well. So then, that's how you typically emulsify oils like if you're doing a cola, like cinnamon oil or citrus oils. And you can look up on Art of the Drink, Darcy O'Neill on Art of the Drink. It's hard to search for, but you can find it. Has something on putting essential oils for sodas with gum arabic. And if you look up that article, that blog article. And the Art of the Drink, you can see the basic procedure for suspending oils into emulsions. But I don't know that orange flower essential oil, because I haven't even seen that. I've seen orange essential oil. Do they make the essential oil of the flower too? I don't know. But that's the way to do it. So you should write in and tell us what's going on. Okay. I.e., tell us if it works. Man, we got a lot to get to. Okay.
And you got 5 minutes.
Okay. Chris wrote in. Thanks again for the show. They wrote into Hey Nastasia, Dave and Jack. I'd love to hear your thoughts and lessons on food in China, as well as developing cooking products in China, i.e. what it's like to develop cooking products in China. Stas, what's it like?
Not fun.
Hard. Hard. I mean, look, if we're like, if, I'll let you know when the next product is ready to come out exactly how hard it is, but it's challenging in ways that I didn't expect it to be challenging. It's simpler in ways that I thought it was going to be more challenging, but it's very challenging in ways that I didn't expect in terms of, yeah, it's just really hard. But, you know, again, I don't know. I probably shouldn't go too much into depth on that, right? Stas is shaking her head. She's giving me the shut up shake of her head. But on food, I mean, I was, you know, I was mainly in Shenzhen. Shenzhen's interesting because people from all over, you know, China come to Shenzhen to work. But the local food, you know, is, you know, from the kind of Canton area. So it's very not spicy. Very not. Is that even English? It's not spicy. I had a lot of steamed seafood. And yes, they really freaking like crunchy just killed fish there, which is totally antithetical to like the way we normally eat fish. I had like a whole bunch of steamed, you know, different species of carp that were all extremely crunchy, but love the fresh. They love the fresh killed. I mean, it's not necessarily my cup of tea, but you know, there you have it. The did I talk about the mantis shrimp here? Yes. I did, right? Yeah. Anyway, so like I should think more. I should try to condense in my mind more of the lessons I learned on food there so I can come back. But anyway, here's another one. I've recently started doing dark chocolate in a wet grinder. See, I told you wet grinders are going to come back. With nibs and sugar. I'd love to hear about your tips, tricks, and riffs on chocolate making. Well, don't make ketchup-flavored chocolate, which is what I started with because nobody – I was the only guy that liked the ketchup-flavored chocolate, right? Yeah. You hated it?
I did not like it.
It was better than the mustard chocolate. Yeah. So the whole point – the reason I started in the wet grinding thing was because I wanted to create the texture of chocolate, which is mainly a phenomenon of – cocoa butter completely surrounding very, very fine solids particles in the absence of liquid, right? That's what it is. And so, like, I was trying to get different powders, very, very fine powders, and I was pre-blitzing those things and putting in the cocoa butter, adjusting the sugar, adding some lecithin, and hoping that it could turn into something that had that texture. But it's very hard because nothing can have kind of water in it. It's, you know, a nightmare that way. When we were making actual chocolate, you know, I frankly learned from reading the Chocolate Alchemy website, which is, I think, the first website on making your own chocolate, at least the first one that I had ever seen. So, yeah, there you have it. And we would put the nibs through a champion grinder first to get them pre-ground, which worked very well. And then we would just, you know, we would use did we use confectioner sugar or what kind of sugar do we use? Do we not care? I don't remember.
I feel like we didn't care.
Or did we blitz it? I don't remember. Knowing me, I like tweak everything, so I probably use something fine. I don't know. And then just let it run. But we had to let it run a long time. The question is, like, opening and shutting the lid, you have to keep it open so liquids don't condense because it warms up, but then you lose aroma, so it's all back and forth. But we would grind for days to get the texture right because, you know, the bigger grinders can do it quickly, and then you conch for however long you want. But we, you know, we couldn't do that. So it was like a very long mélange thing. It was days, several days, and you have to keep tasting it. Anyway, Aaron wrote in.
We're basically at the end here.
Oh, Aaron, I've totally solved your margarita problem. We'll get to it next week. I'll give you a hint. Just increase the simple syrup a little bit. Increase the lime. You need to double your lime and multiply your simple syrup by another – or add another half ounce of simple syrup. But double your lime and your alcohol number should come down. You can add the lime earlier and get it going and you should be better. But I can go into it in more detail next time. Liza wrote in about the GAPS diet. And we still haven't gotten to the freaking Thai basil question, preserving the Thai basil, but we will next time, I promise, on Cooking Issues.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.